going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The host, that is Doug Oster, DougOster.com, moments away. But right now, let's begin by saying your Pratt Pack would like to make you the winner of that $25 gift certificate to Sorgles out in Wexford. If you're the 10th caller at 412-922-1020. And I didn't get a chance to do what I normally do, Doug, this weekend, spend a segment or two talking about the opening weekend for trout, you being the fisherman. I thought we would just share a little memory or two. I have lots of memories with my dad standing in that stream and Tyonesta wearing his waders and actually using a fly rod and reel and watching the magic unfold. It is a special weekend.
Yeah, but what a terrible weekend for the first day of trout. Oh, so yesterday I went up to, first off, big thank you, Lawrence County Master Gardeners, Penn State Master Gardeners. I had a symposium yesterday, but driving up every creek that I crossed was blown out and chocolate milk. And so these poor trout fishermen on your first day of trout, I don't know. I hope somebody found a spot somewhere, maybe where they stocked a lake that didn't have, you know, water pouring into it. I felt so bad. I've got lots of friends that were, you know, they wait all year for this. And like you say, it's a grand tradition, a wonderful tradition.
Lots of memories.
Sure. The funny thing is, I'm done with trout on trout when the trout season starts. I'm catch and release beforehand. They have special, you know, regulations where you can fish them during the winter if you throw them back.
Right.
But I don't want to be shoulder to shoulder, but I understand what an awesome thing it is. But I'm telling you, it was so bad driving up to Newcastle yesterday that people were like pulled over making videos of these streams. And so, what do you do then? Do you make another first day for yourself and your family and your kids and
a bad idea.
Go out when the water is better? It's not going to be any better today. It's going to look awful.
All right. Now, listen, before we go any further, I just want everyone to know I'm good, but I'm not that good that I would have to fly solo with Davey Tree last week. Doug had to exit stage left just prior to the show. I got to tell you, in my 40 years of broadcasting, I was a little nervous, but we pulled it off, and I'm okay, glad you're okay.
So, yeah, last week, about 4 in the morning, I wake up, and my tongue is kind of swollen, and I'm like, what's going on with this? And so I took some allergy medication, and I sat there and worked on the computer, and thinking, okay, this is going to go down. And then I was actually flirting with just calling Rob and saying, I have to go to the ER. Something's wrong. But I was like, okay, it'll get better. By the time I got into the studio last week, I mean, I was here. I couldn't talk. My tongue had swollen up, and then it started to swell up in my lymph nodes underneath my chin. And I was like, okay, that's it. I got to go. And so I called, Rob, I didn't know what to do. Rob said, call Steve Rapaski. So I called Steve, texted Steve, are you up? He's like, yeah, I'm on the road. I said, can you host the show? And I called him, and he couldn't understand what I was saying. I had to go back to texting. And so I did go right from here to the ER at McGee's. That was the closest one I could find, and they fixed me right up. It ended up I had an allergic reaction to a medication I'm taking, and they gave me a special shot with a special antidote. And Rob, it was like sticking a needle that was red hot into the back of your arm. Wow. Yes, it stung. But I was very relieved to be able to speak and not get admitted and to come home, and felt better during the day. But yes, in my 20 years of doing the show, that's the first show I've ever missed for a medical issue.
You missed the best part, so I can hang with Steve. I mean, that'll work, you know? Meadow, Sweet Ape, Berry, Bee Control, Pittsburgh. I can handle all that. Trees, I know a little from hanging out with you. So I said, listen, when I have Luke on, I'm going to keep you on hold. So if you want to jump in, he says to me, oh, I don't have much to really offer when it comes to trees. I'm thinking, what am I supposed to do? But I kind of...
Well, here's the thing, Rob.
What?
You could do it. Here you are. You don't know anything about trees.
No, nothing.
And Luke comes on and you do this two complete segments. This is the magic
of radio.
No, of Rob Pratt. They don't make them like you anymore. You can do it. You can do anything.
All I'm saying is I hope he's okay, but if he's not, wait till I get my hands on
him. Yeah, it's crazy.
But you know, it's amazing. When you sit in a classroom, now I know how I got out of high school because I was a horrible student. But if you sit in there, sooner or later, you're going to pick up something. So I've been listening to you and obviously Jess for years, so it worked out. But I'm just glad you're okay. Now, we've got a full show today. We are going to give you a chance to talk gardening a little bit later, but he always likes to sprinkle in some guests as we roll into the spring season. So who is going to be joining us?
Well, at 7:15, my friend Stephen Biggs from Toronto, the Fig Whisperer, is going to tell us when to bring that fig out of hibernation, and also going to talk a little bit about growing in containers. But Rob, do you want to go to the phone before we go to our break? Somebody's on there?
Yeah, let's go to the phone. Let's head out to 84 PA, and here's John, who wants to talk azaleas with Doug Oster, DougOster.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Doug, I have four azaleas that I planted last April. They seem to do fine during the summer. I don't have a leaf on a single one. My neighbors are all blooming. Should I just tear them out? No.
It depends on what variety azalea this is. Actually, what I would do is I would go out there when the rain stops and just gently bend one of the top twigs and just see if it bends instead of breaks. As long as it bends and you see kind of green in there, you're okay. There are certain, it's awful early for azaleas to be blooming. And so whatever that variety is that the neighbors have, you know, mine won't be blooming for, gosh, another at least month. And so, and some are not evergreen, so they don't have leaves on them all year long. And if they made it through the summer, that drought we had, and I think
with a lot of water.
Right. Yeah. Trust me. I know. But that should do the trick. You should be okay. And
I thank you on that. One fast question on holly. The deer have decimated them. I mean, they have stripped the leaves complete. Now, I have a lot of stems. Can I prune that back and hope that some of the stems will regenerate leaves?
Actually, what I would do instead of the prune back, I would, when things warm up a little bit, maybe a week or so, I would get a fertilizer called Holly Tone. And
okay.
It's the word holly with the word tone, T-O-N-E, next to it. It's an organic fertilizer, been around since the 30s. It's specifically formulated for things like azaleas, rhododendrons, dogwoods, and, of course, hollies, hence the name. And I would spray
an acid.
Say it again.
Heavy in acid?
Yes. It's a high acid plant, fertilizer. And I would just sprinkle that down, read the application rate. There's no reason to put more down. Your plant can't use it, and it just gets washed away. And so just kind of scrape it in there. Sometimes what we can do with holly or a plant like that, we can take something called a bulb auger or some other way to get a hole down a little deeper. You know, maybe pound in a pry bar or something, and then sprinkle that fertilizer down a little lower. But you could get away with putting it on top and just kind of scratching it in, And then the rain will take it in, and it'll come back. Okay. It'll be fine. And then once it does come back, then you can start thinking about shaping maybe next spring and seeing it. The other thing to think about is you're going to have to keep the deer off that plant for now.
I understand. So I got to put net.
It's either a physical barrier or you can spray it with something. I use this stuff called Bob-X with a B, but there are many, many, many different repellents, and they all work really well. And so keep the deer off it so that that plant can come back. And once that fertilizer hits, it'll green up and you'll be good to go. If you have problems with that, if it doesn't come back, just give us a call back in a month or so, and we'll talk about what to do next, all right?
All right, appreciate you guys.
Thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much for your call.
All right, who's coming up after the break?
Well, Steve Biggs is going to school us on figs. He's such a good guy. We've been friends for a long time. And if he can grow figs in Toronto, we can grow figs here. And lots of people, lots of other gardeners like me, torture themselves by growing figs in a climate where figs aren't supposed to grow. But you got to do it. If you've got a reason to do it, you've got to do it.
Well, listen, this is why I think the fix is in. You know, we were talking about trout season, and my dad was just the best. He loved it, and this was like one of the very few times that we would actually bond. You know, he was a part of the greatest generation. The only time they talked to you is when they told you to shut up, right? So it was kind of like, you know, field of dreams, if you will. I just absolutely love watching that man be out there doing what he did with that fly.
So rod. Did you just like hang with him, go, or did
no,
you fish?
I had the little Zepco reel, you know, from Sears.
And, Zepco 202.
Yeah. And waiting for, you know, I had to use a bobber because I wasn't that skilled. And my dad was out there. But what was neat, the flies that he was using and the rod and reel were given to him by his dad.
Wow.
So it was just a big part of history. But here's what's amazing. You know what my dad's favorite cookie was? And he always had a few in his pocket when he went fishing? Fig Newtons. It's all in, baby.
Did you ever catch a trout while you were out there as a kid?
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, they weren't very big. And sometimes it was a bluegill or a sunfish. But when you're that age, it's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of memories. Good. But, you know, going to camp was really cool. The food.
That's the best.
Yeah, man.
That's the best.
I miss those days. All right. We'll take a short break. We'll come back. Doug's got a real cool guest coming up. Mr. Biggs on the other side next.
Well, I'm welcoming back to the show my friend Stephen Biggs. He's from Toronto, Canada. He is what I call the fig whisperer. Welcome back to the show, Steve. Is fig whisperer okay to call you that?
Oh, I love that name. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
He is the author of Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't, also Growing Figs in Cold Climates, 150 of your questions answered, plus many other books, olives, lemons. He is a gardening expert. Steve, I wanted to talk at the top here about figs. And so up here in our, or actually down here, in our climate, we'll still get frost till about May 15. My tree is covered with bags of compost. Other people have their trees in containers in the garage. When is the right time to bring that tree or shrub or whatever we have left, bring it outside?
It's a great question, Doug. And the answer is it depends, because the thing is that when your fig starts growing inside, a lot of people have potted figs they take inside. And once that fig begins to grow and you got those little buds swelling, you got little leaves on there, then it's sensitive to frost. And so what we don't want to do in the spring is put the fig out too early and scald those leaves, or even worse, cause those little figs to fall off. So what a lot of people do is, I guess I should back up. We like to wake up the figs early because we want to eat figs earlier. And our relatively short growing season means that we want to get the figs going early so we can ripen as many as possible before summer's done. And so that's why we wake them up early.
If I'm looking at the weather and we're getting into the end of April, early May, and I'm not seeing any frost, you think I'm okay in my case to start pulling those bags off? And because I guess I would leave it laying kind of horizontal for a while, just in case there was an emergency, I could throw something on top of it. Before I straighten it up, because what I'll do is I'll get all that stuff off and then I'll actually tie it up and straighten it up so that it's like a tall 15-foot tree.
Yeah. Yeah, that timing is good. And I do something similar here. I don't have bags of soil on mine. I've got straw bales, but same idea. And so I'll uncover it, but then I don't stand it upright, because if we get a real cold snap, then I'll put some moving blankets over top of it or something, so that if those buds have started to swell on there, then they're nice. They're protected nicely from that frost.
When is your frost-free date up there?
Yeah, we're about the same as you.
So when will you start to uncover the straw?
I'm going to start taking them off. Usually I aim for about a month beforehand, so mid-April.
Okay. Mid-April. Okay, well, yep. we're coming up to that. I guess that'll be the plan. Now, the advantage for me of having the bags of compost on there is when they come off, they get used in the garden.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great idea. And I should say, I've got buddies who are more ambitious than you or me. They make little greenhouses over top of their figs, so like a hoop tunnel. And the benefit to that is then you've got that little mini greenhouse collecting heat in there in the day. The soil warms up around your fig, and it really gets it going quickly. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a bit of extra work.
I wonder if I could use like a 3 mil drop cloth from the hardware store and maybe support it with some PVC or something and put that over there, and that will give me a little jump on the season. Because let's talk, before we move to containers, let's talk about the joy of at the end of the season when those figs are on that tree. There is nothing like it.
Oh, they are so good. And the thing is with figs you buy at the store, there's no comparison to a fresh one from your garden, because to ship them from wherever they come from, they have to pick them before they're perfectly ripe, and they never really ripen perfectly. So you're right with that.
Tell me, how many different types of figs are you growing now, Steve?
Oh, so Doug, I had to cut back. I was up to 50 varieties. And then my family said, okay, enough's enough. You take too much of the garage through the winter, too much of the garden. So we're down to about 15 or so varieties, but they're my favorites.
Well, that sounds good. And actually, I've got a link to find your way to Steve's website, but also there is a local grower here that's growing, selling all sorts of different, very unique figs. So, Steve, let's talk a little bit about containers, because you're doing a class all about growing in containers, right?
Yeah, April 14th, I'm running a live virtual class, and I'm really excited about it because there's a really cool container grower who I had on my podcast last year on the prairies. So his winter temperatures get down to, you know, minus 37 Fahrenheit. And he's got a short season, but containers is the way that he grows fruit and veg despite those conditions. So he's got about 3,000 containers. So we're talking all about containers, because whether it's a home setting or a bigger setting, it's a great way to really turbocharge your growing and grow things. Like, say, for me here in Toronto, okra is always a bit of a challenge. If I put that in a container somewhere hot, it just goes gangbusters.
Right. And even with me, with my vegetable garden being a 30 by 40 vegetable garden, I'm always adding containers because there's always something else you want to grow. Or, like you said, when you need something to get really hot, like in my case, it'd be peppers. I want peppers to be in a spot where they're getting as much heat as possible, and then they put on as much heat as possible for the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, great way to make space. A couple times we've got a ridiculously long driveway. So we turned half of the driveway into a whole container garden, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants. And it's such a great way to create growing space.
So before I let you go, give me one good tip, important tip for people growing in containers.
Containers, you need moisture, consistent moisture. And the most common reason I see people fail with containers is they let them dry out too much. So either water very regularly, or get a container with a reservoir in the bottom called a self-watering pot or sub-irrigated pot, and it'll stay nice and moist, and you'll probably double your yield.
Steve, thanks for getting up early, coming on the show. Steve Biggs is the author of Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't, Growing Figs in a Cold Climate, 150 of Your Questions Answered. And all the information about Steve's upcoming container class are at DougOster.com. And Steve, what's the best way for people to find you?
Find me at foodgardenlife.com.
Thanks again. It was great to see you.
Thanks, Doug. Bye.
When you hear this music, what do you think of? I think of a lava lamp.
In the end of time, there was one thing left. Cockroaches and Keith Richards.
Here we go. It's time to ask you to be the 10th caller to win that gift certificate.
What kind of rejoinder? You're supposed to be happy gardening, like, dum 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 dee dee dun. Hey, everybody. It's Doug Oster, the garden guy.
Listen, I honestly, you know what I thought I was going to hear? Hey, it's your mom, honey. Is that you? I mean, I'm thinking, where am I? Anyway, our 10th caller wins that Janoski's gift certificate.
Should we be holding hands and have a candle and like from the deep beyond?
My goodness gracious. definitely mix things up a little bit. All right, so 10th caller wins that Janoski's gift certificate, 412-922-1020. Anything before we talk to Barbara in export?
No, let's talk gardening, though. Give me a call. I've got lots of stuff to talk about, but I'd love to talk to you.
866-391-1020. Barbara, you're up first. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. We had a water line break that took out all of the plantings along the front of our house late last year.
Oh.
Yeah. So I need ideas for something that is deer resistant.
Okay.
What was left after the excavators was a short row of potentillas, two rhododendrons, two azaleas that are not doing well.
These are left, though. They got put back in, or they worked around them, or what happened?
They worked around the potentilla.
Okay.
Well,
That potentilla is indestructible. That's good news there. You like that plant?
Okay.
I love those.
I love it because it has those beautiful yellow, in our case, blossoms that last most of the year. And that's what I'm looking for, something that's very colorful. We have a white brick home, and I love the color that we had. So the potentilla, I think, is going to survive.
Okay.
The rhododendron, one of them needed to be removed. The other one was not disturbed. And both of them seem to be doing all right, except the deer, of course.
Yeah.
The two azaleas are simply surviving. They had to be replanted. And I had half a dozen hydrangeas the endless summer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They don't look so good. I have a couple green sprouts. The other problem I have is that there's an overhang that goes the length of the front of our home. Most of the overhang covers windows that are about 4 feet high. So I don't want something that's really tall. Mm-hmm. And then there's one small area that's a raised planter that has windows that are only 1 feet from the base of the planter. What's there right now was not disturbed. I was told that they're yew plants that have been trimmed down. Previous owners were here 35 years ago. We don't really like them, but they're growing, so we
right.
have them.
They're gonna. Let's first tackle what's left.
Yeah.
And for all those things that are left, I think that since there is growth on there and they're back in place there, I would start with fertilization. And so for our rhododendron and our azaleas, and you could probably get away with the hydrangea too, get the holly tone. Maybe garden tone or plant tone for the hydrangeas. And again, just wait until when we pass this cold period right now and things start to even out a little bit. And it's a granular fertilizer. I would scrape it in on the very top. Like I said before in the last call, or maybe get it down a little deeper if you can. But you don't want to mess around with those rhododendron or those azalea roots. I think just gently raking it into the top. And they could really benefit from like a mulch of something like compost or something like that. Because every time it rains, a compost on top of the fertilizer, it will leach those nutrients down in there, and I think those plants that are there will do their thing. Now, is this full sun or part shade?
Yeah, that's the other problem. We have basically no sun until about noon. And then there is still an overhang that is about 3 feet that goes along the whole length of the front of the house. We get sun then maybe until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then the neighbors' tall trees mean that we really don't get much direct sun.
That's actually a great spot to have the morning sun and afternoon shade. That's a great spot for a lot of shrubs.
The opposite. We don't get the morning sun.
It's afternoon sun.
Yeah, the sun doesn't come over the roof of the back of the house to illuminate the front of the house until late morning, and we don't get much sun past the mid to late afternoon because of the trees in the neighboring properties.
So how much space do we have left to plant? And okay, let's actually talk about the yews. Those are going to be a pain to get rid of, and I know that they're very common and you don't like them, but they've been there 30 years. So that root system is going to be brutal. If you can live with them, I think you'll be better off. If not...
I agree.
Okay.
No, I agree. That's where we've been. They're under the overhang completely.
Yeah.
I have no idea how they're getting watered. They're growing.
They're indestructible. So how much space do we have left to plant?
We have at least 100 feet of planting.
Whoa.
The potentilla to the side are fine, I think.
Wow.
And the one rhododendron at the same corner of the house as the potentilla. But basically, the only thing left along the whole long length of the front of the house, it's a ranch. Is going to be right now 5 surviving very small hydrangeas that were just planted last year before the water line broke.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 azaleas that are surviving but never thriving.
Yeah, I think the fertilizer will help there. You're going to have to also think about a way to get water on these. But as far as deer resistant, are we okay with something like evergreen, or does it have to flower?
I love the flowers. We have a lot of green just living surrounded by a woods here mostly. I really was looking for something with color.
Okay, well, here's one thing to think about that you could kind of prune to how you want it. It's a type of Rosa Sharon, but it's a type of Rosa Sharon that doesn't make babies. And so it's sterile. It has a variegated foliage, which means the leaves are white and green, or there's another one that has gold and green. And then it has double, which means fluffy pink flowers. It's called Sugar Tip Rose of Sharon, and it could be pruned to anything you want it to be. It can be it can be a 15-foot tall tree, or it can be a 4-foot shrub if you prefer that.
We do have Rose of Sharon that's doing very well along a fence line to the back.
Yeah, they're another weed And so then another thing might be, how do you feel about forsythia? They're blooming right now.
We have some in the woods lining our woods in the back of the house. The backyard goes right into the woods, and I love our forsythia, but they're in the woods.
So it's a one-trick pony, but it's a nice trick. That might be something that you could put up front if you liked it for spring blooms. I'm just trying to think of something else that blooms that is deer-resistant that we can stick there. There are...
through the summer, too, not just just for the spring.
There are some other potentillas with other colors. There's a really nice red one. There's a really nice white one. Let me think about it. Let me think about it a little bit in the break, and then when we come back, I'll come up with a couple other suggestions. So continue to listen. And the number one thing is going to be get some fertilizer and keep fertilizing those plants to get them going here in the spring so they can make it through summer. And then I'll have a couple other suggestions for you after the break. Okay.
That's great. And I did like the hydrangeas, by the way, the most because they had the longest blooms.
Well, there's so many. There's so many cool hydrangeas on them, and you're able to keep the deer off those hydrangeas. That's the biggest concern.
No, I have to put netting over it. But you're correct. The deer are literally eating everything.
Take a look. The thing about hydrangeas, that Endless Summer series, and especially the newer ones, are phenomenal because they'll bloom no matter what. But there are some other species of hydrangeas that are really cool. There's this whole series called Invincible.
Invincible.
And many of them are pink. As long as you can keep the deer off them, they are tough as nails. But now they've got new colors, and I'm just telling you, I've got them all over. I've got them all over the garden. And once they're in place, if you keep the deer off them, you'll have blooms, very very long series of blooms, and they're kind of different looking. There's a Latin name for them, but we just call them the smooth hydrangea. And they'll bloom under any circumstances. There's whites, there's pinks, no blues. But take a look at that Invincible series. There's a website called Proven Winners. And Proven Winners, they're the ones that introduced these. Look at their hydrangeas, because there's a mountain hydrangea, which is pretty cool. There's the smooth hydrangea. There's the oak leaf hydrangea. As long as they don't get too tall for you in your spot there, those would be options too. And since you can keep the deer off them, you'll be in good shape. And I'll have a couple other suggestions. I'll have a couple other suggestions for you when we get back from the break, okay?
I'm listening. Thank you
so much. Thank you.
All right, short break. Coming back, we got more calls waiting for Doug. And next hour, it's vegetables and side dishes on the Coons Cooking Hour. Follow up with our first caller of this half hour, then more callers. Go ahead.
Well, here are some great deer-resistant plants. I had to look them up. I couldn't. My brain does not work. But think of elderberry. They've done all sorts of cool stuff with elderberry. So it's like a black foliage and like a pink flower. One called Itea, I-T-E-A, Clethra, small hawthorn shrub. Viburnum is a good one. I grow viburnums and the deer don't like them. One called Caryopteris. And then I grow Wajila too. There are some smaller Wajilas. And one I didn't think of that would be perfect, Spirea. There's lots of different Spireas with like golden foliage and pink flowers, just all sorts of crazy ones. Go to that Proven Winners site and search some of this stuff. And if you didn't get all those names, send me an email through DougOster.com, and I can type these out for you and send them to you, and then you can look at them through that website. All right, Rob, we got a couple more callers. Let's get to them before the end of the show.
All right, here's Cindy in Allison Park. Go ahead, Cindy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm talking about a forsythia as well, but mine's probably a 50-year-old forsythia. The last 2 years haven't bloomed well, and I usually put compost around the bottom of it, but it's just not. I mean, it bloomed, you know, but it's just not full. It's very scraggly looking.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because my friend Dennis Bowman, he used to do the weather on KDKA.
Mm-hmm.
He sent me a picture too, saying what's going on here. And then I looked at my forsythias. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of in the same boat, especially this year. And I'm wondering if it's more of the winter, especially in the case where you've got compost around it. It's getting everything it needs. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was just the winter. Now, what I would consider doing, since forsythia, you can't kill it.
Right.
I would consider giving it what we call rejuvenative pruning. And so, since it is 50 years old, take a look down at the bottom and look for the biggest canes, so to speak, the stems, and kind of trim those out. Maybe trim it back a little bit. Don't take more than a third. And then besides that compost, again, you know, we've talked a lot about it on today's show, a good balanced fertilizer on there. Throw something down there like a plant tone or garden tone. And then hopefully we won't get minus 10 in the winter. And I think your forsythia will bounce back. And as I said, as I've looked around the area and I've looked at my forsythias, they're not as full as they should be. And I think it's just the winter. Okay.
May I ask one other question?
Yeah.
We're doing our small perennial bed with flowering little plants. I'm looking for, I did go on the Proven Winter site, and I went on other sites, but I'm looking for a small plant to put in there that's deer resistant. I'm going to put a bee balm, a dwarf bee balm on one end, and I'm putting if I can find like a dwarf salvia on the other.
Yeah, I was going to say salvia is one of the most deer resistant things that I plant.
All right, let's go to Dan in Cleveland. Dan, you got the last word today. Go ahead, Dan, 2 minutes.
Hey, Dan.
Good morning. Hey, I've got some butterfly milkweed that I just got the seeds for. Do I need to stratify those before I plant them?
Yeah, that would help. So give them 6 weeks in the fridge. I wouldn't be afraid to take maybe a third of those seeds and just try them and see if you get something to sprout. But they always germinate better after stratification, that cool treatment. But I'm growing one called a narrow leaf milkweed, and the instructions just said to just try and sprout it without stratification. They will sprout without stratification, but just not as well. And as I said, you know, take some of them and give them a shot. Try and start them, and then put the other ones in the fridge for about 6 weeks. Look up stratification of milkweed, because a lot of times what people will do is they'll put them on like kind of a wet sand type base, and then cover the whole thing with plastic and just leave it in the fridge. Anybody else who lives in the house, remind them that those are seeds in the fridge. That's nothing to eat. Okay, Dan?
Dan, thank you for the call. Doug, it's all yours.
All right. Remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow. Glad to be back on the show. And Rob, thanks for taking over last week. You did a great job, as always.
Somebody said, where's Doug? I said, he's tongue-tied. Hey, real quick, what's your favorite vegetable?
Tomatoes.
Yeah, me too.
Tomatoes.
So tomatoes are vegetables?
And this is our project this year.
Yeah, I know.
And we should do a video. Now, I've got a brand new, the fourth season of In Doug's Garden starts running on KDKA streaming, KDKA TV streaming.
Am I going to make it to the
stream? In May. And I think we could come out and do a video of teaching you how to grow tomatoes. What do you think? You like to do videos, and you won't have to do anything. We'll do all the work. All you got to do is flap your gums, and I think you're good at that.
Yeah, I am good at that. You can get David and Heather to show up, then I'll definitely do it. Good people. All right, stay with us. He is Doug Oster, and coming up, we're going to talk veggies with Frank Dentisi next.